Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Happy to Meet Cute. This is Fallon Ballard here with my intrepid co-host, Courtney Kay. Courtney!
Fabulous Fallon!
Oh my goodness, Courtney. What a week it has been since we last chatted. How is everything going for you?
Fine. I'm nothing. I'm fine. Let's talk about you. Nothing is exciting in my life besides finishing Loki and WandaVision. Okay.
Those are both very exciting things. Yeah. So I am happy for you there. Last week was the most intense week I have had since starting anything publishing related. I'm like looking back at it and I'm like, what is happening? What is life? So I had a book come out on Tuesday. Yeah,
that feels like, looking back at your week, that feels like the smallest thing.
Oh, it's so ridiculous. So, I knew going in, just because of the way that scheduling worked out with All I Want Is You, I was like, I'm going to have some really tight turnaround times for edits. I did not expect to have 5 days for line edits and for those 5 days to be during my release week.
So, oh, shit. I didn't realize that they were line edits.
Yeah. So I...
Helicopter.
Oh, yeah. You're good. It totally was just like a fault of timing where I got them back and my editor was like, I want you to have like 2 weekends to work on these line edits. And it just so happened that on those 2 weekends, one of them, I had a wedding that I was coordinating and this past weekend was my launch party. So even though I had 2 weekends, I really didn't because I had too many outside things already going on. So I had 5 days basically to get these line edits done. And they were during my release week. So it was like I still had a really great Tuesday. I went to my favorite little coffee shop that it's kind of far from my house. So I just like really only go there on special occasions. Mm-hmm. And then I went to a couple of Barnes and Nobles that were nearby. I went to the first Barnes & Noble where I have done like tons of stuff with them. And I was like, I don't see Right on Cue on your shelves. And they were like, yeah, we only ordered 3 copies and we already sold them all. And I was like, okay, I mean, that's good. But maybe next time you could order a few more.
Were you cool. Like, do you have some on order? Did they say they have?
Yeah, they were like, oh, yeah, we ordered more. And I was like, all right, well, let me know when they come in and I'll come back and I'll sign them. But then I went to another local Barnes & Noble and they had some. So I got to sign some books. So that was fun. But then it's like I came home from doing all that and I literally like then spent the rest of the day working on my line edits. So it was fine. It was fine. But then I got an email from my agent, I think I got it on release day, where she was like, we should have news on the Romantasy either today or tomorrow. And I was like, oh shit. Because it's been with my same editor at Putnam now since like December. And just like with the whole editor transition and now the head publisher at Putnam left and they've just had like a lot going on over there. And obviously I've had a lot going on trying to edit 2 books that they already had in the works for me. So it was just a lot. And it just worked out that I got the offer for the Romantasy the day after Right on Cue came out.
Oh my God.
So the Romantasy is a thing that is happening.
Yeah.
Depending on when you're actually listening to this podcast, it might not even be posted on Instagram yet, but it's going up at some point on Wednesday. So it just depends on how quick you listen to these podcast episodes. but it is happening. Putnam is publishing it. It's the first time Putnam is doing anything like fantasy, sci-fi really related at all. I'm like still in shock, disbelief. Like, I really had convinced myself that it wasn't happening with Putnam. And I was like, they're going to say they don't want it or, you know, whatever. And then I'm going to have to go on submission again. And we all know the hell that is being on submission. And I was like, just like basically had convinced myself that it was dead and not happening. And then all of a sudden, like by the end of the day on Wednesday, I was like, oh shit, I have another book deal. Yeah. So it was wild. Book release on Tuesday, book deal on Wednesday, turned in line edits on Friday. It's
like, this is like, you're like, this is what I've been training for. Like, your montage just coming into like full effect, your training me, montage.
Like, sitting at my computer, like, while Eye of the Tiger plays in the background.
I have not the right words for how excited I am for you and happy and thrilled and just like, oh, so excited.
I am.
You deserve it all.
Oh, thank you. I am still sort of like waiting for it to like fully sink in. Because it definitely like, it was like, you know, I mean, this is how all things in publishing are. It was like, no word, no, like, no information. Everything is taking forever. And then all of a sudden, everything happens within, like, an 8-hour span. Like, because, you know, it's like any sort of negotiations. Like, your agent calls you, you have the first offer, but, like, you're not taking the first offer, obviously. And so you have to, like, go back and, like, do all this. And I'm like, oh, there's no way this is, like, getting done today. And then it's like, oh. It's getting done today. Like, everything is so slow until it's in, like, fast forward, and then everything happens at once.
It's absolutely wild. I think it's fine to talk about, but I submitted a proposal for a graphic novel opportunity that came my way, like, the end of last year. And it's been very slow, like, but I'm just kind of I don't know. I have in my head been like, oh, okay, it's not happening. And it probably won't happen just because it's, I don't know. It's been so long. I don't know. But, you know, there's always that chance. And so I'm like, okay, just don't say anything so that I still think there's a chance and then maybe it'll happen.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised because you were like, oh yeah, I never heard from them. So it's a nothing. But then it wasn't a nothing. They were just like, oh yeah, I haven't gotten to it yet.
Yeah. Like, okay. Yeah, so we'll see. But it's just funny, like, I'm learning with publishing. I don't know. Like, I'm grateful that my agent can handle that. And I can be like, hey, like she's the one who nudges it and handles it. So it's just nice because I can submit it, forget about it, work on another project. Like, I don't need to sit and fixate on it anymore. I don't know. That's at least what I'm trying. My relationship with, like, submitting things, I feel like, has gotten healthier.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. And it's like, if it's rejected, it doesn't mean that, like, I'm personally rejected or, like, something, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's not my value. It's just the proposal of a project. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. That's all it is.
Yeah. And I think hopefully, you know, by this point, like, if this one doesn't work out, then the next one will. Like, it's not like.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like when you're early in your publishing career, it can feel like a no is like, well, the whole thing is over now. And it never actually means that. Like, there's not a single no that means like you will never be a writer ever. Like. Mm-hmm. Agent rejections, submission rejections, all of that happens to everyone. And you just gotta like keep going. Like, there's never like a final, this is the end.
Yeah. I mean, could you have believed a year ago that you would now be announcing a romanticy deal?
No. And like, and maybe even that was like, oh, that's like a, you know, a pie in the sky. It could happen, but maybe mm-hmm. won't. But for me to be staying with Putnam and being mm-hmm. able to do this, like I think I've talked about it on here before. I just assumed it was like, well, we have to show them this book because of my option clause, but they're mm-hmm. obviously not going to publish it. Like I've said that 1,000 times through the course of this because they just haven't done anything like that before. So I just assumed yeah. that they wouldn't want to. and just the way that things worked out, you know, I feel very lucky that I get to stay with a team that I'm already comfortable with and I know is going to take good care of me. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. That was huge.
And I think it is so cool to share and talk about and know that like these happy like teams and arrangements do happen in publishing. Because mm-hmm. you hear so many horror stories and like lack of support. That happens too. Yeah. And it happens in like smaller ways, sometimes in bigger mm-hmm. ways, but like to overall be sticking with the same team who's following you into a new genre is like so exciting. And it must feel so good to know that they have essentially got your back.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just, for me, it just, there's just a sense of like, of relief and like comfort with it because yes. I think if I had, you know, if Putnam said like, no, we don't want this, and I had gone out to other publishers and someone else had picked it up, like, yeah, there are plenty of authors out there who work with like two different publishers and different genres and all of that. But for me, like to just know that Putnam is invested in me and my career is huge.
Huge.
You know, like that is like a big sense, and that they trust me enough to be the person that they're going to like try something new with. And you know, they kind of did that with me with the holiday book too, is like I went to them and said I wanted to do this, and like, yeah, the original way I presented it, they were like, no, you can't, but you know, they were like, let's take a chance and let's give you two books this year and see how it works out. And you know, I'm very lucky that they are willing to trust me with a lot of these things.
Yeah, I'm yeah. so happy for you.
Thank you, friends.
And for readers, and just like, we get to like do all, like we, like I'm like part of this.
You are, obviously.
No, but like going to your events and stuff, like, oh my God, do we get to wear like fantasy stuff?
Oh my God, that's all I want in life.
I mean, like the fan art and like just everything, like the, everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're going to get, so like, sword clips for our hair.
Yes, because, like, fantasy really does feel like a whole new world.
Yes.
Where things are way more intense.
Intense, yeah. We need yeah. costumes. We need midnight release parties. Like,
you're gone. Yeah. I mean, that would be the actual dream. I'm trying to, like, not get too in my head about those types of things because...
I'll do it for you. Okay, I want the candles scented like your characters. I want the Fae Crate book box, so tell Kim.
I'll make sure she knows.
I want everything.
That would be amazing. Yeah, the fan art of your characters. I mean, I have had people do that for me with mm-hmm. my rom-coms, and I love it so much. But there's definitely more of a community, I think, in the fantasy world where that's more of a common thing.
Well, it's, I don't know. There's just something about the fantasy that's like, there's multiple layers to like the fantasy mm-hmm. fandoms. Like, I don't know how to explain it, but I think we all know.
Yeah. I'm excited. Yeah, now I'm like, ooh, because, you know, the whole thing is set in like a Moulin Rouge-esque sort of world.
I know.
So I'm like, do we need to get like fancy like feather headdresses and
obviously we need to get everything.
I'm excited. It's gonna be fun.
Mm-hmm. I'm so happy for you. Congratulations.
Thank you, friend. And thank you for everyone who gave me good juju and good vibes. I was on a panel with Denise Williams at Love Y'all Fest. Aww. And we were on a POV panel. And so I was talking about how I wrote some parts of the romanticy are in third person. And I basically was I don't know that anyone will ever see it other than my agent and my beta readers, but I did it and it was cool. And Denise just grabbed the microphone from me and she was like, no, they will see it. Everyone will read this book and have their eyes on it. And I was like, thank you, Denise.
I love it.
Sometimes we just need people to put the good vibes out there for us and manifest for us.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I'm assuming you told Sonia Hartle.
I haven't talked to her personally. I got a DM her.
Gotta tell her. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. She was one of the first people who read it. So, yeah, it's wild. It's happening. Last week was bonkers.
You know when you're just so happy and your heart is so full, you just can't even put it into words? That's how I feel for you.
Aw, you're so sweet.
Just yay.
Yay! Well, on that note.
I need you to get one of those, those dead husband gowns?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah, you need to walk around your house in one of those and be like, excuse me, Matthew, I am now a fantasy author. You will kneel. And I don't know, be super dramatic. I don't know. What does Sarah J. Maas do all day? I feel like.
Oh my God.
I feel her rooms are probably decorated like castles.
Yeah.
I feel.
Yeah, my office is definitely way too bright and cheerful. I need to. I'm going to get some mood lighting in here or something. I need to hang a red scarf over my window so that it.
Whenever the door opens, there's a sensor queued up to play dun, 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 you know?
Oh my God. Love this. Amazing.
Amazing.
All right. All right. Well, we have an amazing episode today because we chatted with Alexandra Kiley, whose book is out now, and it's set in Scotland. Oh. And talk about just a fantasy. Oh. I just want to move to Scotland.
Well, I've already told you about how I was supposed to travel abroad at 18 for college and meet some European.
Mm-hmm.
Scotland was on the list. Okay.
That did not work out how we wanted it to. We both ended up marrying people who grew up in the same small town that we did.
Details. Yeah. You get to go to Scotland.
I do. I'm so excited.
And yeah. I know we talk about that a little bit in this episode. Yeah, yeah, she's lovely. She's so amazing. Her book is so beautiful and escapist and
yeah.
Feel like you could just breathe in the greenery.
Mm-hmm. And little bit of housekeeping before we get to that is our Patreon is now up and running. Our Discord is happening. There are some of our favorite author friends are in there. We are talking about Drag Race. We are talking about Love is Blind. We are talking about Vanderpump Rules. We are talking all the things.
I am proudly holding down the MCU channel.
Courtney is giving very strong gift game, not going to lie. It's all happening. So go check that out if you haven't already. And you can come see me and Courtney in a week and a half on March 16th at Smitten Bookstore in Ventura at 5:00. We will be having zero professional conversations about my book. we will be having only ridiculous conversations about everything else.
Can't wait.
We're going to have some fun. It's going to be good. So come see us and say hi and hang out.
Yay. Oh, and you have a couple of other things before that.
Yeah. So this weekend, so March 8th, which is Friday, I'm at the Ripped Bodice at 7 o'clock with Kate Spencer. And then on Saturday, March 9th at 2 o'clock, I'm at the Barnes & Noble in Huntington Beach with our lovely friend, Emily B. Rose.
Yay.
So that'll be super fun. So come see me, come say hi, and we'll be right back with Alexandra Kylie.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Happy to Meet Cute. We are super excited to have our guest here with us today. We already have had fun conversations before we even started recording, so this is going to be a good one. We're super excited to have Alexandra Kylie here with us today. Alexandra Kylie writes big-hearted romances full of banter, found family, and deep love. When she's not writing, you can find her drinking tea, hiking, or gazing adoringly at the mountains of Colorado, where she lives with her husband and two kids. Her novels are inspired by her semester in Scotland, where she fell in love with not only the lush and magical land, but also the people who invited her into their homes and made her feel like family.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I need to go there.
You do. I should mention that our whole conversation before this was about how we all want to move to Scotland and marry Scottish people.
Yeah. sorry, current families.
You know what? They would forget. Alex, welcome to the podcast.
Yay. Thank you so much for having me. I've been such a big fan of both of yours for so long. So this is so fun.
Before you logged on, we were like, we love Alex. Like,
yes.
It is too. The feeling is mutual.
Yes, I have been reading your book and just absolutely dying because I am preparing for my own first trip to Scotland. I've never been there and I'm so excited. And it's just like feeding my soul. And I'm like making lists of places that I like need to go.
I love that. Yes, I have an itinerary planned for you. Yes.
And you sent us like the best pre-order swag I've ever seen. You. I actually showed it to Michael. I was like, Michael, is this not the best pre-order swag you've ever seen? He's like, actually, that's the best. Like, that's so good.
I love that.
And my husband doesn't have strong opinions on book swag, but he really, really liked yours. So that says a lot.
Love that.
Yes, having the book boyfriend's bookmark.
They're the best. I know. Well, so I feel good. Like, you know, I with like the cover and everything, I have a vision that I can't articulate at all until I see it or don't see it. And somehow Logan was like exactly what I had pictured. And so Steph makes those fantastic bookmarks. But I was like, I feel like the one, like the guy on the cover is just already just everything I ever wanted. And you never know what the like copyright and everything on that. But I reached out to my publisher, like, is there any way that I could have this? And they were like, sure, go ahead.
Yeah. That's amazing.
I remember doing the same because I like use clip art of Rachel and Morgan from the cover. And I reached out to my publisher and I'm like, oh God, they're gonna say no, I should not have asked.
Right.
Like, ask for forgiveness later.
I know. But
they ended up saying it was fine. It's
fine. Yeah.
I love that. all right. Well, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about Kilt Trip, and then we'll dive in from there.
So Addie is a tourism consultant, which, like, how can I have that job? She just travels all around and helps companies, like, figure out what their tour should be. So she basically shows up, sees Logan in a kilt, and is like, Outlander tours, like, done. Problem solved. Your company will be successful now. But their family company is, like, they've been doing this for at least two generations. They have all these connections. They go to all these places, and they're, like, fast friends with everyone that they visit. So for Logan, this is such, like, a legacy and community. And so parting with any of that is just basically completely out of the question for him. And his dad is the one who hired Addie. So he is not a fan. So they really spark this office war. And I loved the, like workplace romance of this. And I sometimes actually forget like that is one of the main tropes in here, because to me it's so like out in the Highlands and out on the bus tour and stuff. But that ended up being one of my favorite parts of this. And then Logan finds out that Addie is sort of like guarded and closed off and not going out and wanting to experience Scotland the way that he does, because she actually has these pictures of her late mom from their honeymoon. And so he helps her find them, which is really my favorite part of this. I feel like that this story started out with a lot of the like bus tour and all the fun, and I think like, sort of evolved into that piece that just felt like such the like heart of this story now.
That's beautiful.
It's just so sweet. And I like want to do like a Logan type tour, because like that, like Addie is sort of like, you're not going to like these like big landmarks that everybody knows about. Like you need to do that. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm the kind of traveler where like, I totally want to go to these like random places that no one else has ever heard of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I just love that. And like, literally I am like, is this real? Can I find this tour? How do I do
everything is real. There's one castle, because of like the way that we did this edit and like shifted some things around, there's one castle that is made up, but it's like, it's sort of just another castle that I had been to. And my editor thought it was very funny. We have a line early on where Addie's like, no one's even heard of that place. But everything else is real, and I've been to most of the places. It was like I basically just wanted to put like my whole bucket list itinerary into this book.
Wow. Oh my God. Amazing.
That's amazing.
So what you're saying is we should take the book to Scotland and follow it around. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what Fallon's gonna do.
I love it. Literally might. And also I was gonna be like, have you put something together that's like a list of all the places that they go?
I should do that. That little map that I sent does have like the little,
yeah,
the main places that they go. I should do that. That'd be fun.
That'd be cute. And then you could send it to me and then I will go to all those places.
Fallon's like, I'm going to need this personally for me. Yes. Specifically.
Yeah. That's all I really care about in this moment. All right. Well, we kind of touched on it in your bio, but I would love to hear a little bit more about your experience with study abroad and how that inspired this book.
Well, prior to study abroad, I went to Scotland with my family after I graduated from high school. And I think because my mom and I were like so obsessed with Outlander, like I just sort of think that my mom was like, we should go to Scotland. So we went and my parents were like, you should check out the University of Edinburgh and see, like, maybe you would want to study abroad here. And I had a high school boyfriend at the time. And I was like, I would never break up with him and move across the world. How dare you even suggest it? And I refused to even look at this campus. So fast forward 2 years later, shockingly, not dating that guy, more than happy to go to Scotland. And so I ended up studying abroad, like, independently. Like, my school only had an exchange with Glasgow, and I didn't want to go there. So I basically got on a plane and showed up. And like, I grew up in a small town. I went to school not far away and got there and was like, I don't know a single person in this entire country. And I called my mom and I was like, I'm getting back on the plane. This is a huge mistake. And she was like, why don't you eat something? And probably tomorrow it will be okay.
Your mom. That's always great advice.
It really is. Like, have a nap and try again. It ended up being, I mean, I think in general, a lot of like college experiences like this, of like, you're kind of out on your own for the first time and you can't, I just think I would call my parents and be like, this thing has happened, help. And they were, you know, 8 hours behind me and sleeping, and I had to like fend for myself for the first time. And I also just met people that were just like soulmate people. Like, I'm still in touch with them. Like, one of my friends came and visited a couple years after I was back here, and I like got to meet up with her in Edinburgh this summer. So I feel like it was just this super magical place and a super magical time and super magical people. So it was really, really incredible. And then fast forward like 10 years, and I had never really had a big interest in writing. But I think it's like this idea had sort of been in the background always. They had this what was it called? Like an international student society, and you would basically swing by this tiny little old building, and they would give you tickets for like £5 and be like, here's your train ticket, and here's your entry ticket to go to Stirling Castle, and like, here's this coupon to like eat fish and chips here for basically no money. So I traveled around a whole bunch through that. And one of them was like this overnight bus tour that was like kind of the foundation of Logan's tour. so I think that that's, you know, that was really the start of it. Once I started thinking about writing, it was like, obviously here, it has to be Scotland.
Oh, yes. Oh my God. Did you have some places that were your absolute favorite? Well, I'm guessing you put them into the book, but are there like just the top, like your top, top?
Top, top. That's hard. I really feel like Edinburgh is top, top for me. Like, it's just such a small city. Like, everything is walkable. The architecture is so beautiful. And the city is just so moody. Like, the weather is really terrible all the time. But it just lends this, like, atmosphere. And you're like, I just want to be cozy and in a pub or coffee shop with a book. So I feel like there were lots of places like that, or just like being out in the city. It just feels like very safe and welcoming and people are super nice. But as far as like kind of more one of the tour places, Urquhart Castle is on Loch Ness and it's in ruins. And there's all sorts of like funny stories about this, right? Like everyone's fighting to have this position, you know, in the water. And so in some war or another, like Scotland basically blows it up themselves so that no one else can have it. But it's but it's out on the water and it's
sounds
out there
very
still
Scottish.
Kind of, yeah. There's like this one tower that's left and everything else is kind of like disintegrating down into the water. But very beautiful and picturesque, obviously. And it's kind of isolated. It just has those feelings where you're like, I see why people write stories about slipping back in time here. Like, you just feel it. There's something in the air. You're like, I believe it.
I really identify with that level of pettiness. Like, I'm going to blow up my own castle so that you can't have it. Yeah, yeah, I'm here for that.
Yeah. Just, doesn't that just sound like the Scottish like middle finger?
Oh my God. I love it. It's just so, like, yeah, it's like that. It's so dumb, but you remember that, like, kids' nursery rhyme where it used to be like, and if I die before I wake, I pray the Lord my toys to break so none of the other kids can have them?
Like, I don't, but that's hilarious.
Like that one.
Am I the only one? Oh my God.
Only one.
Alan, did
Maybe
you write
you made
that?
It up.
Maybe I did write it. Maybe that was my own match me.
And this is why we write books. From spite.
Amazing.
So
well, we have to talk a little bit about Logan because like, I feel like he is like, has that Jamie Fraser energy, but I don't have to read all of the problematic bullshit in Outlander to get it.
Yay!
That's so funny. That's exactly what I wanted to write. So I feel like I fell in love with Outlander in high school, and then I read basically exclusively Scottish historical romance for like a really, really long time.
Oh, wow.
And then sort of ventured into contemporary. And so I think that I always had that. Like, I want this romance hero who has a lot of, like, I don't know. There's just something different about a historical romance hero, I think. So I wanted some components of that in this. And I think that having him be a tour guide and so connected to the land and the customs and the folklore and everything made it really easy to kind of tap into some of that. But yes, like very nurturing, and I love how he like holds space for Addie to grieve and is kind of like, whatever you need. Like, they go up to the moor, which is the last place in her mom's picture, and he's just like, we can get back in the car. Like, I will walk out here with you. I will stay here. We can leave, whatever you need. And I just loved his ability to like really connect with people and meet people where they're at from his job and the way that he's brought up, and then meeting someone like Addie, who's so closed off and like has not experienced that from people a lot. So I just loved that connection and him really like drawing her out a lot.
Yeah.
I love that. I also loved his mom and like how she brought Addie in. That was so sweet.
Yes. Mm. Yes. I love her too. Yeah. Yeah, I felt like having just the way that Addie was, you know, and like missing her mom, but sort of like walling herself off from that grief. It felt like having Gemma be that like found family place. I mean, both, like, she loves both of the parents. Neil is also very funny and entertaining. But I think Gemma just has this warmness and like this very clear understanding of like, I see you hurting. Like, I want to bring you in and like cook with you. So. Love her too.
So sweet. I know. Like, I'm like, can I just go knock on random doors in Scotland and be like, hi, will you take me in?
It was actually kind of weird. Like the first day that I got there. So I went back this summer and my best friend, her husband's family is from Denmark. And so they go over for like a month. And she was like, flights from Copenhagen to Edinburgh are like $59. Like, I would just come over. So she ended up meeting me for the week. But we got there, and she was kind of already on that time. And I was super jet lagged. And obviously, like, my mom is like, eat something. Like, I'm not great when I'm tired. And I felt like the first day walking around being like, I'm back here. I'm so much older than I was coming here at 20. Mm. And none of the people who have been living in this land for me are here. Which feels very strange. So there was definitely some of that. Like, I wish that I could just, like, cruise over to Gemma's for dinner. And
yeah. That's the problem with making up people in our heads is I'm like, man, I wish these people were real.
Too.
Sometimes do you ever have this moment where you think back on a memory that you wrote like it was an actual memory?
Oh, yes.
And then you remember it was not an actual memory and you're like, oh. Great.
I feel like that even in drafting, like my critique partners will always call me up because I'll be like stuck on something and they're like, you can change this, like you are in charge here. And I'm like, this is factual history that cannot be altered. Like, I just get so in my head about like the world's creation and remembering that actually this is just all in my brain.
I feel that too.
Actually, that segues really well into my question of, do you want to speak to like the writing process for this book at all?
Sure. So, I mean, Kill Trip went through many, many, many revisions. So I feel like there wasn't necessarily a process for that. Like I wrote an original book. I went and saw, let's see. So my son turned one, my youngest, and I felt like, you know, you hit that part of motherhood of like, I want my own things again. And like, not nap schedules and diapers. And I went to Chicago with my mom and she watched my kids and my aunt watched my cousin's kids. And the three of us went in to Chicago and like had dinner in the big city and went and saw Hamilton. And I was just like, this is the greatest thing that has ever happened. And I went home and I was like, I'm going to write a book. And so I sat down and I wrote not Kill Trip, but something also set in Scotland. And eventually I actually met someone, an editor who was a Pitch Wars mentor a number of years ago. And she introduced me to someone who read it and was like, I think you have a great voice, but you should learn like one or two things about Storycraft. And I had myself like a nice little cry in the grocery store parking lot. But listen, she's totally right.
Voice is harder to learn.
For sure.
I do think that is true. But I think I had just sat down and written 80,000 words, and that doesn't actually make a book. So there was a whole long process of this, but I feel like what I have settled on this one other time I wrote a book with the current book that I'm writing is really doing like a flash draft, get as many things out of my head as possible. And it has to be in a document that's not like the real document because that's too much pressure. It has to be in like this little play sandbox that doesn't count. I had a really hard time going from like polished copy edited Kill Trip to like something brand new. And then really putting all of that into a spreadsheet of like all the scenes, and then having basically character arcs, romance arc, external plot. Mm-hmm. And like, does at least one of those, preferably all of them, move forward as we go through the scenes? And what I often find is like, these scenes are the exact same scenes, but I just put them in two different places.
Mm-hmm.
Or we were like touching hands and now they're like, I love you. And we went way too fast. And like, the romance arc needs to get smoothed out. So it helps me basically just to visualize like, where are we in the story and what is everyone doing along those arcs? So I really like that component of like the editing process. I find drafting very stressful. Like, there, like anything could happen.
Mm-hmm. That's the best part.
I think so many people think that. I'm just like, decisions. How will we make all these decisions?
Yeah. I get decision fatigue while drafting. Jenny Howell, I love that. She does this too. After, and I know she won't mind me sharing her story. But so after you write the draft, she calls it reverse outlining because you're outlining after it's already written.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I did that within the event. I had to go back and like when I was doing major edits on it, it helped me see it clearly.
Yeah.
To put it in a spreadsheet. Yeah.
That may have come out of like Pitch Wars community because I feel like my critique partners like that came in from somewhere.
Yeah.
But yes, I really like that of just like, what do I actually have and what do I need to have?
Yeah, because it's hard to see like the forest through the trees when you're like that deep in it with edits.
Well, and I get very attached to like, well, I wrote this one line and it's adorable and therefore this entire scene needs to stay. So I feel like pulling way out where I'm like, this is a spreadsheet. Like there's nothing specific in here. I can be like a lot better about letting stuff go or moving on. And the rest, I'm like, I will justify this till I die.
We've all done stuff like that. Like I have literally named characters a specific name so I could use it in a joke. Or like the joke came first and I was like, oh, well, obviously they have to, their name will not change.
Their name now.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
That's amazing. Well, that's kind of a perfect lead in because we did want to talk a little bit more in depth about your plotting and using the spreadsheets. Mm-hmm. And as I was running through the flow show before we started talking, you called me out for my judgmental tone.
Fallon was talking like, about and plotting I see spreadsheets. That you like to do spreadsheets.
Which is so true. But honestly, now that you just talked about it, it makes way more sense in my brain because like everybody knows at this point that I'm not a plotter, but one thing I hate about revisions is like not feeling like anchored in them. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times, and I think doing the spreadsheet after I've already written a draft might actually help me in the revision phase
convert
of things.
You yet.
It's like a bird's eye view.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so how did you start using this method?
Yes.
I think that maybe this did come, I'm trying to think, I'm like, maybe did Sarah Brenton get this like from her mentor, who is Trisha Lynn? Does that seem right? Now that I feel like I invented this, but now I'm thinking back, like that. I think I got the reverse outline somewhere along the way. I think those were often had a lot of stuff in them. And I would love to not write when writing is hard and just like endlessly color code spreadsheets instead. So I think at some point I realized this has to be like literally just has the three things that I'm looking at. Otherwise, I'm just procrastinating.
Yeah. So your spreadsheets you use to target like specific edits.
Yeah, so I'll just look at, like, across the whole book, character arc. Like, basically, are we going from the lie to the truth? And, like, are we taking steps along the way where that's changing for whatever reason? And then is the romance arc shifting? Which, that's been interesting. I can talk about this later with the second book. But, like, Enemies to Lovers, I think I just love so much. And I think I read so much of that arc felt, like, really natural to me. And then writing something different, I was like, I don't know how we proceed here. Like, but I think being able to look at, are they taking like incremental steps towards opening up to each other and kind of breaking down like their misconceptions and stuff? And then not moving too fast. I think especially with Logan, he's just like, I want to tell you about my feelings all the time. And like, he definitely falls first, but I think there were parts where I had to be like, okay, but he can't fall that fast. Like, you know, we're enemies still. Rated N. And then with the external plot, just making sure like, I mean, it's basically stakes, which I feel like I started out hating, and now I read books without stakes, and I'm like, I'm probably going to use stakes. Like, I hate that that has happened to me. But pretty much just going through being like, is there something changing here along this external plot, or are they just relocating? Because I would happily just write them cruising around. Like, and now we're going to this adorable place in Scotland. So that's pretty much all I keep in that spreadsheet at this point. Otherwise, it's just kind of... It's a lot to put in anyway, so it's just kind of cumbersome. So trying to keep that simple and useful.
Yeah. No, that actually makes a lot of sense in my brain, and I did not expect that to happen.
And then the other thing that I'll do that's like a level, like a layer later in revisions, like when I feel like I have a pretty solid draft, and I learned this from my Pitchfork's mentor, Amanda Elliott, but basically, I highlight now the important lines on those different arcs. And like for Addie, it was like, I kind of had my own spreadsheet that was like, what's going on with her mom? Like at the beginning, I didn't have a lot of flashbacks or anything with her. I was just like, can't we just all know that like this would be so horrible to lose your parent? And I remember talking to someone who was like, yes, but like we need to know what it means to her. Like what specifically did she lose? Like who was this person to her? So really going through and being like, okay, I can see, like, I have all the scenes down the side here, so I can see how this is moving and where the information is happening. Like, a lot of it was happening later, like, when she's talking with Logan's mom is, like, you know, 35% of the way through the book. It's like, that's too late for us to, like, be getting invested. So I'll go through and kind of slot in just, like, specific lines that I feel like really exemplify that scene to be like, is this all moving in a direction or not? Or is this like the same thought just repeating over and over? Like, how do I differentiate them? So I'll do that too, but like much like in almost like a final polishing round.
How I use it.
I lost Fallon there.
Oh, no, I think Fallon's getting ideas for her.
I am.
She's like, how can I apply this?
She's like, you're gone too far.
So I used this in during Pitch Wars as well when I had to like crank out edits really quickly, like major edits. And it was after I had already like gone through one major editing round and I had to really fine tune like specific threads. And what I ended up doing was I started in a spreadsheet because, but then I got like too fixated on the actual spreadsheet and I was like not working. Like it took me too long. Like I was like overcomplicating the process, which wow, that's what I do. So I was like copying and pasting full paragraphs and stuff to go with each thread into the spreadsheet. So what I ended up doing was just going back into the draft, and I had in my spreadsheet the notes of like, okay, Morgan and her dad, like they need to kind of draw out their reconciliation a little more. So I, as I was reading through, like I had all these notes, like, oh, there's Morgan and her dad. There was something else, something else, something else. And as I was going through, I actually highlighted each, I did a read through of the whole book and I gave each thread that I wanted to focus on its own color. And then I would like highlight specific instances where it occurred in the text. And then I would comment like, okay, here's this, here's this. And so I ended up kind of working the spreadsheet into the draft that way because my brain had a hard time going between like document to spreadsheet and like knowing how to. So I ended up doing it that way, but I started in the spreadsheet and it did really help. And now what I do is I just have like a chaos notebook of all the stuff that I need to fix. And I still go back into the text and just add a comment bubble of like, okay, here's where this instance occurs. Go back. And that way I can look it up in the text and it pulls up all right there. And I know a lot of people are probably screaming at us, like, just use Scrivener. Like, I think a lot of people, like, Scrivener is probably very...
I love Scrivener.
Good at this. Do you love it?
I love it.
Okay, I have never used it.
I haven't either. And I am old and hate technology and hate change.
It scares me.
And yeah, so I'm like so freaked out about it. But I do feel like if I ever actually used it, I would be like, this is amazing.
But you...
I feel like you could use it like... I mean, you're writing in like Word or Google Docs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I use Word.
I feel like you can use it that way. And then just basically have like the sidebar of what are these scenes called? Mm. But I really like it when I want to go like move stuff around. Where are we right now in this? I like having a little like outline in the sidebar.
Yeah. But you also use spreadsheets along with Scrivener.
Mm-hmm.
So is Scrivener like less intuitive than I'm imagining it is? As far as like pulling out character threads and subplots?
Yes.
Okay.
I think what like could be really helpful, which I'm finding now when I'm working on multiple projects at the same time, like mm-hmm. I'm editing two books right now and drafting another one. Yeah. And I am really struggling with like, did I actually write that scene or is it just like in my head?
No.
And I feel like Scrivener would really help me because being able to see like the scene breakdown, I'm like, mm-hmm. that might be something that I actually need.
Mm-hmm. I really like it, but I think I started using that just like really early on because I'm always trying to convert people. And then they're like, this is so overwhelming. And I think I just started there. So it didn't, I don't know, it didn't feel like a learning curve because I didn't have another process already.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, I like being able to see stuff and then I'll basically manually go in and put stuff kind of in like nested folders. So I'll have like act one and then I'll have like this section like through the pinch point or through the, what am I trying to say? The inciting incident and like the inciting incident through the adhesion. And then I can like put in like word count goals too. So I can see like where generally am I supposed to be right now. That's so I like that, but that's all. I do that all manually. There's probably a way to do that for real, but I don't like learning new things anymore either.
I wonder if Scrivener would eliminate me going through and like color coding everything though, because you could probably just search for like a character name, right? Yeah. And like every instance of their interaction would come up.
Yeah. I still color code stuff, but then you can like search by color. So I find that really helpful once I'm at that stage. Then I can go through and be like, I just only want to look at this thread.
Yeah.
And then I can go see like what I highlighted in that color.
I mean, I do that in Google Docs so I don't have to read through the whole text multiple times. Like I'll search up a character's name if I'm focusing on their thread.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I'm trying to like
a lot to think about here.
I know. I'm trying to be like, you want me to get Scrivener. But I don't know. Maybe not.
Scrivener, would you like to sponsor this podcast? They're like, no, we don't actually. Oh my gosh. All right. Well, you might have converted me, Alex, which is not something
I feel like I had you on the first one. The second with the color coding, I could see I was losing you.
No, see, my issue is you're not losing me. It's Courtney and I were talking about this before we started recording, is I like just had a call with my editor yesterday. So I'm like in that phase right now where I'm like planning revisions. And so my brain is like, is this going to make it all better?
Oh, I love that state.
It's like,
yeah. You're like, what magical thing. This feels like when you have like little babies and you're like up in the night and you're like, I will spend any amount of money on a swaddle if you tell me it will make them sleep.
Yes. Like I will try anything if it's going to make editing easier.
Yeah. Anything. Now is the time when don't trust yourself with purchases.
Good point.
This all blanket right. will make everything better.
It will. It probably will, though.
It will.
On the off chance it might, I feel like it's worth it.
You've got this.
So funny.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, something That was totally worth it. I've been so excited to have this conversation, Alex, because I read your description that you put on our little form, but Courtney hasn't looked at it yet. And I need you to share with her and with everyone your first Taylor Swift experience.
So, Taylor Swift, we're about the same age. I'm a little older than her. So when we were like 19, I saw her at the Grizzly Rose, which is this line dancing club in Denver. And like one of those places where you can go before you're 21, but they put that like huge Sharpie high like marker on your hand with like you can only get off with a Brillo pad. And then you're like there, like with your hands. Like, don't look at me. I'm totally 22. Anyway, so I saw her there and, you know, she was like in her cowboy boots and 19 and so adorable. And after every song, she went, "Oh my God, thank you guys so much." And she was just like so precious and tiny. I mean, I was too, but like looking back. And then I got to take my daughter to see her this summer. And it was just so amazing. Like, I've obviously been a fan the whole time and like seeing the evolution of her music, but seeing her only once when she was 19 performing at like this tiny, tiny club. And then seeing her, you know, at the Broncos Stadium was so fantastic. And then the thing that I had mentioned to Fallon was, I think being able to go with my daughter, she was 7, was just such a magical thing to like, she's such a Swiftie. I feel like she knows some of the like intermediate albums more than I do. Cause I was like, I don't know. I was like dealing with YouTube all the time.
Yeah.
And so like, she's got like the actual CDs that she listens to in the car and stuff. And she's like, "Mom, what's this song about?" And I'm like, I don't know that one. Like, how do you know that one? But it was so fun. Like, obviously you guys know like all the bracelets and everything, but I feel like taking her, everyone was like tiny baby Swiftie and they were just giving her bracelets and didn't want to exchange. So she had like her entire arm, like, full of bracelets. It was just such a sweet environment, aww, I guess. And then I think I was just getting like very, I don't know, weepy mom moment with Long Live and like that line about like, "I had the time of my life fighting dragons with you." And I feel like that shift from early Taylor Swift when like I was in that mode of like, I have these big dreams and I want to do these things. And then taking Kara and being like, that was the best time, right? Like all the little make-believe and the little kid moments that she's kind of like starting to age out of now. I was just like sobbing through that song. Like, you know, just having this moment of, and I think, you know, there's so many reasons that people really connect with Taylor's music, but I think there's a big group of us that feel like they grew up with her, you know, and like moved through those stages at the same time. So it was just like super special to bring my daughter to that and, you know, to experience the whole thing like kind of through her eyes too, of like, this music is just going to span like so many different people and ages and like, so magical.
That's so amazing. And like, how cool, like remembering when you were 19 and had all these big dreams for yourself, and like now that you brought your daughter, your dreams have like expanded to encompass, yes, her dreams, and like,
yes,
you're sharing that really special moment together. That's so cool.
It was so fun.
I love that.
She was so into it. I will add that we went with my sister-in-law, and so we all like picked an era. So I did Red, and Kara wanted to do Lover, and I did that like eye makeup, like the heart around the eye with like the sparkly stuff. And so, I mean, we started out strong at this show, you guys, but she goes to sleep at like 8 o'clock by like 10, and the show is nowhere near done. She's got like glitter in her eye. We're in the stadium bathroom, like washing water, trying to get it out. And like, she's standing on the seat because she can't see. And she like stepped back and fell into the seat.
Oh, no.
She's like crying, and she's like sleeping on my leg at one point. So it wasn't all like the most. It was so fun.
Sounds right. Even more fun. Sounds correct.
That's the full story.
That's amazing. But how cool that like you got to see Taylor at such like a young age, where, yeah, to now like really have like borne witness to how far she's come.
Yeah.
And now, you know, you being able to sort of mirror that with like, you know, look how far you've come. Like you have a book coming out. Like that's amazing.
Dang. Yeah.
I love that.
Love that.
That is
it was
very cool.
Very cool to see, like, I think her stage presence was the thing that was most impressive to me, of going from this like, oh my god, thank you so much. So, I don't know if you guys saw her in concert, but I feel like she had this like connection with the audience where she's out there like making eye contact and like almost making these like facial expressions that are in conflict with what she's singing, where you're kind of like, we're all in on something, you know, like there's something extra special about that. And I felt like I am here connecting one-on-one with you. Like obviously everyone else is feeling that way. And like, just such an amazing, like glow up, I guess, with that, where she's really just become one of the top entertainers too, on top of all of the amazing music too.
Wow. That's cool. And yeah. I think it is like, so like it's because she really shares so much of herself mm-hmm. in her music and her songs. Yeah. And who was it? Alexandria Bellaflor. We had her on the mm-hmm. podcast and she was saying, you know, you really want her to be happy because she's yeah. shared with you all these mm-hmm. things she's gone through. And so you're just rooting for her. And then so yeah. when she sings in her songs and like a lot of people know what who it's about, right? Yeah. Or something. And so like,
and my daughter's always like, who is this about? And I'm like, you don't know any of these people.
And so yeah, you are in on something with her. And that's cool. Yeah. That's so cool. That's fun. Yeah. She's a special creator.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. And it's been so fun. Like, I think everybody knows at this point, I'm not like a major Swiftie at all, but like watching her and Travis has just been mm-hmm. the most fun, I think, yeah. a pop culture moment we have had collectively yes. in a yeah. very long time. And I'm just like living for it. And I'm like, yes, get your ass to the Super Bowl after your show in Tokyo or wherever she's going to be. And like, mm-hmm. like totally. I'm totally buying into like all the hype.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the way he calls her Tay, I'm like, someone write this as a romance hero. I can't handle it. It's too good.
So good.
Can't it's handle so good. It. I was on Instagram recently and there was like this reel of how like they were hugging after his win, like out on the field. And he like holds her side, but he does this little like quick squeeze, like when he hugs her, like on her side. And he did it a few times. And I was like, why is this reel 10 hours long? Loved it. Like, oh my God. All those.
Why is it in my next book?
Like all those little, like, they just seem to have such a good connection. Like yeah. they seem so comfortable around each other, which is very different to how we're used to seeing Taylor. Like, you know, my bestie Taylor. Like, but she's usually, and I think we've said this before, like she's usually very private and closed off with her relationships. And I don't know. I almost feel like those other people, like, couldn't handle their own, I don't know, insecurities of not being the major one in the spotlight.
Right.
I don't know, with her. And like Travis is just so like, he knows
yeah.
who he's dating, you know? And he's yes. here for it. And like, I don't know, like he's not intimidated by it. He's not like less of a quote unquote man, like you know, the toxic, he's not like that. He just like, he embraces it and embraces who she is and it's and what she's done and her success, and it's just cool. Like yeah. her success doesn't diminish his in some way, you know? It's not a competition. Right. And I feel like with her other relationships that was always sort of like an underlying issue.
Right.
Not that I'm an expert, but
we kind of are.
Yeah.
I also just feel like they're like little meet cute with the bracelet, and then she didn't talk to him. You're just like, I'm invested.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell me more.
I mean, basically, like, can you imagine a more adorable, like, pickup line?
No.
I mean, it's not even a line, but like, how do you not immediately fall for that guy?
Yeah. He is very charismatic because I feel like, you know, now my Instagram is like him and his brother, like their podcast. I'm like, yes, I will get deeply into this. Like, they're both so funny.
Yeah.
Can see it.
It really, the two of them, I don't listen to their podcast, but I see clips of it all the time on my TikTok. It comes up all the time. And just like the way that they talk to each other and the way that they talk about other people in their lives, I'm like, their mom deserves some kind of award because like she clearly did a really good job. And I love the when they had Jason's wife on their podcast and I was just like, I'm obsessed with her. Like she is like so cool and I just want to be her. And I love, and Jason's the same way. Like he just, like, she just gives him shit, and he's just like, yes, dear, whatever you say.
Oh, no.
I'm like, oh.
Love it.
Is Winter, can you hear the cat?
No.
Winter likes to cause trouble while we're recording.
She's currently obsessed with the cup of a cough syrup medication. Like, the cups that come with the dosing cup. She got her little paws on one, and she has been playing with that thing for months now.
She's all in.
Yeah, she's ready. All right. Well, we have one more thing we have to talk about because I know you have some thoughts. And we are anxiously awaiting season 3 of Bridgerton. I feel like we have been mentioning this on the podcast for like a year. Like,
it's been we're ready for season 3. And
still don't have it. But how are you feeling about the upcoming season?
So I fully trust that I can be converted to literally anything by them. Like, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But from the first two seasons, I don't have like a big Colin thing. It's not there for me right now. So I feel a little skeptical. But, you know, if anyone could make me fall in love with anyone, I feel like also the like hero glow up, like, Anthony in the first one with those sideburns, and you were like, I don't know about
that's
this.
What I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he walks on in season 2 and I was like, hello.
Okay.
Yeah. So I have a lot of trust that it will be fine. But it'll I'm not going into it like as excited as I think I was for the last two.
Interesting.
I'm also very just curious, like a lot of the tension was sort of we didn't know about Penelope, but now we do.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, like, they'll come up with something else. I'm sure.
Yeah.
And I haven't read her book. But okay. I'm not sure how, like, true to... I feel like this is going to diverge from the books.
Yeah. I think... I know we've talked about this on the podcast before, but I'll just say, spoiler alert, if you don't want to know about the book 3. But yeah, I was like, they're going to have to change a lot of the book because in Colin and Penelope's book, he doesn't fall for her until she loses weight. And so like he goes away on like one of his trips and comes back and like, oh, she's hot now.
Ew.
Now I can see her as like... Yeah.
Thanks, I hate it.
Boo. Boo. Two thumbs down. So, yeah. I mean, obviously that storyline is going away.
Right.
Yeah. So, but I'm interested to see how, I don't know. I feel it on her side. Like, I feel like they've done a lot of the groundwork of, like, building up her crush on him.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But I almost, like, I kind of, like, want to see her, maybe this is where it will go, but I want to see her, like, flirt with other guys, have attention from other guys, and I want to see her sort of, like, break away from that a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
Just some amount of, like, he needs to wake up and realize that she's been there the whole time. But I think there needs to be, like, it's not just on him. I think there's some amount of her being, like, you need to deserve me too.
Yes.
Not just like wake up and realize. Yeah.
And then
do you feel excited
like
about Colin
grovel.
Coming into this?
Me?
Yeah.
Either
go
of you.
First.
I I am obsessed with Penelope. I've been obsessed with Penelope from like the first moment. Nicole yes. Coughlin, I'm sorry if I'm saying your name wrong, Nicole, since I know you listen to this podcast. She is everything. Like on, what is it? It's not, is it, what's the
Dairy Girls.
I am like fucking obsessed with her. Okay. Oh, I have big feelings. So going into season 3, I also love her character because like she's made some morally gray decisions.
Yeah.
As far as like what her honestly kind of obsession with Colin has like had her do to some of her friends, right? Like she has kind of betrayed some of her friends. And now, spoiler alert, like obviously you should probably like not listen forward if you aren't up to speed on Bridgerton, you can pause now. Okay, moving forward. With the Lady Wimbledon revelation, I was fucking obsessed with that revelation. Okay. I feel like Fallon, what you're saying, they wouldn't have revealed that unless it was going to further complicate her story, right? Because that was the big complication up until this point.
Yeah.
So moving forward from that, that has to be useful in her story arc.
Hmm.
Girl's got power. Like she has, she is like the top of society at this point. She is the society. So right. like, how is that? And like, I've honestly never really liked Colin because he just brushes her off too easily. And he is very sweet. And I like how Penelope has this side to her that is very sweet socially, like to kind of pass. Mm-hmm. But like, personally, she is a fucking like, don't mess with her. Do not cross her. And I'm really excited to see like, her kind of come into herself,
mm-hmm.
like as one personality, and just come out, right? Just like be herself wholeheartedly. And I'm excited to see how that impacts Colin. And I'm also excited to see how they kind of, I don't know, amp up his character. He just needs to be fleshed out more. Like, who are you, Colin? Yeah. Who are you? Like,
yeah.
When I think about Colin, I'm like, meh, like who? But the same thing happened to me with Mr. Bailey. So I was like, who is he? And then he comes like, oh.
A lot. I feel like he had a lot. Like he had his own subplot going on in season 1, though.
You're right.
But I feel like Colin was just like, I went to Greece or wherever he went over and over. And you're like, okay.
Like, cool, bro. That's
basically me all the time. I'm like, Scotland.
Yeah, Colin's kind of a bro. Colin's a little bit of a bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just feel like, and I do trust them to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I want her love story to be on her level.
Yes.
Like, mm-hmm. I want her to get the love story that she deserves.
What if it's not Colin? Is there any direction that this could go that it wouldn't be him?
No, it's Colin. Yeah.
Okay, it's then Colin. They've got something big up their sleeve then.
Yeah. I think
they do, because there would be no romance arc here if he's just like, oh, it's always been you. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
He could just wake up because she's sort of there already. So I think there's got to be a lot for a whole season to keep that going. So
there's got to be a struggle.
Things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, we trust Shonda, like,
we do
implicitly.
Like, we do.
Yeah. And then I need more Benedict this season because I love him.
I love him. I feel like that was maybe part of my, like, not obsession with Colin was because I just really wanted it to be Benedict instead.
Yeah.
Like, season 3, can it just be Benedict instead?
But here's the thing, is I think we need more time, and I think Benedict, the character on the show, needs more time before he's, like, ready to, like,
come out,
do the full love story. Like, mm-hmm. he is still very much in his I'm having threesomes and orgies in the art institute house place.
Yeah,
like, I feel like we need to see him fuck around a little bit more before
fuck around and ready. Find out. Don't you think that this season will bring him in a lot more? His
yeah
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 his he'll probably be next
development,
unless Unless Eloise is next.
Oh,
I could do that
I really
too.
Want her to.
I do too.
She's so great. I love her.
Eloise's is going to be interesting because, again, if you have read the books, you know why.
Mm-hmm.
The hero in her book cannot be the hero that she ends up with on the show,
mm-hmm.
For reasons that I won't spoil if you're going to read the books. But I feel like we might need to see this season, like, some of her potential love interests.
Okay, don't you feel, I've said it once, I'll say it a million times, don't you think her character is, like, super queer-coded?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you for validating me.
Yeah, and it's perfect because since they can't give her the love interest that she had in the book, they might as well just make her gay.
You might as well.
Yeah.
Like, she already is gay, so you might as well just go for it all the way and give us what we want.
Yeah. Yes. Give Elsa a girlfriend. I feel like her and Benedict are just, they need to have their time, you know, like they need to have their queer community time.
Yeah,
I feel like I felt that so much when they had that scene and they're like on the swings.
Yes,
just like, you too.
Yes. I did too.
It was so good,
Alex. Me too.
Like,
that was
the
moment.
So much potential here. That was the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and I feel like maybe they did that on purpose.
I hope so. They seem like they know what they're doing.
Yeah, because I feel like Eloise could definitely end up with a woman. I feel like Benedict is probably bi.
Me too.
And can experiment and, like, you know, still date a whole bunch of people in this season. And then I feel like we'll have it. We'll see him end up with a woman, I'm sure. But
yeah, I think it could go. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Amazing.
And I know, like, in Queen Charlotte, there was a very strong queer romance subplot.
Yeah.
So they're like, I don't know, just, yes, make it the main plot. Here we go. Season 4.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're ready.
We are ready. All right. Well, before we let you go, Alex, are you able to share with us anything that you have coming up next? What you're working on? What book two?
So you guys said that and I was like, am I allowed to share?
If you're not,
I think
it's okay.
So. No one's told me otherwise. So I am working on book two in the same world, which is Jack's book, and it's called Scott and Bothered.
All right. And lastly, before we let you go, can you let everyone know where they can find you online?
Yes, mostly Instagram. I think all of my handles are @KylieBooks. I sometimes venture onto TikTok. Mostly Instagram.
Nice. Love it. Well, Alex, this has been delightful. I apologize in advance because I will be contacting you as I get closer to my trip to get all of your lists of recommendations.
I would love to talk about Scotland at all times.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. This was so much fun.
Yay.
Oh,
we're so happy for you. Happy debut.
Thanks.
Yes. Thank you.
And thank you everyone so much for listening, and we'll chat with you more next week.
Thank you so much for listening to Happy to Meet Cute. If you enjoyed our podcast, we would love it so much if you would give us a follow on social media. We are at Happy to Meet Cute on Instagram. And also, if you could please leave a review and subscribe, that would be amazing. If you would like to follow your host, you can find Courtney at Court_KKAE on all social media platforms. And you can find me, Fallon Ballard, at Fallon Ballard, everywhere you imbibe your social media. If you would like to buy any of the books mentioned in this episode, you can find links in the show notes. And a special shout out to Zachary Kibbe and Matt Ballard for our amazing theme song. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we hope to see you next time.